New Kansas football 30 for 30 coming up for you in just a moment. Let's establish first that the bar moved so quickly from year one of Miles V. Klieman to year two. From, all right, what was the better hire? Who is going to be the team in this state? Is it back open for business for Kansas? To Kansas is embarrassingly bad and as bad as ever. That fast, 1 year, that's where things moved. And that's my big takeaway from that game. Much more about Kansas than it is about K-State. I said Iowa State's just out there doing their thing. I mean, K-State's out there doing their thing. Right now, the team doesn't have a dynamic offense, but it's got a really dynamic special teams unit and a solid to good defense, and the offense is coming around. K-State was as advertised. Now, Kansas was worse than advertised. I get it. I've heard people saying and speculating, hey, this may be the worst Kansas team that they've ever had. And I guess to an extent I believe that, but I didn't expect it to be as bad as what we saw. I mean, it was dreadful bottom-of-the-barrel stuff when it comes to coaching. And that's where, to me, this is all accentuating the fact that, like, the race to who made the better hire is over. I mean, it's done. Tell me all you want about get their own recruits in there and all. I don't need to see any of that, man. I see how they're recruiting. And from a ranking standpoint, it's relatively similar. I happen to believe, as someone who does look at it with purple-tinted glasses, that there's more substance to K-State's classes and what they are doing, and they're being truer to form of what they want in guys. And I would also say that what we've seen from Deuce Vaughn is already indicative enough of, hey, they know what they're doing, and true to form are going to find guys to fit that K-State mold, right? Where is the Kansas true freshman that's making an impact like Deuce Vaughn? We haven't seen that. We haven't seen that at all. And maybe a part of that is coaching. And that comes back to, again, the hire that K-State made worlds better than what Kansas did. Very much the two hires have fit their stereotypes to a T. Kansas all style, no substance. K-State all substance, less style. And it's playing out the way that I would have told you it would have played out from the beginning. And that's where we're at. That's what that game tells me. Like, I understand also that I've been somebody that said, hey, this is an asterisk year, and I'm not going to judge anybody too harshly on this. And that is correct. I suppose there's your mulligan, Les Miles. He's going to be around next year. Kansas ain't firing him and paying the rest of the $10 million on that contract. But you can judge people on things that happen on an actual in-game basis, right? I mean, like, I can judge when I said I wouldn't judge somebody over the course of a year, what happens? Like, all right, Kansas had Puka opt out. They've had some issues that are difficult to deal with, I'm sure, with COVID. Les was out for a game. Okay, I can chalk up some of the bigger picture stuff there. But, like, within a game, to kick it to Phillip Brooks with 8 seconds left in the half, to dial up that screen pass that they're throwing with their 17-year-old quarterback.
Like, are the coordinators too afraid to tell them, hey, maybe we shouldn't kick it to Phillip Brooks this time around? Hey, there's 8 seconds on the clock. No reason to kick it to this kid. Let's kick it out of bounds. 3 seconds on the clock. They'll take a knee. Nothing to worry about. It'll be just a little bit worse at 27-7. No big deal. Why can't we speak up and tell this guy what he needs to hear?
I'm sure the Kansas City media will be right on top of it, Mitch. We'll be right on it. I am here to keep Kansas in check and keep taking shots, because that's what I do, all right? Like J.J. Redick, when you leave him wide open, I will continue to take shots at Kansas, and I did so again today with a new 30 for 30, the latest in my award-winning series. It is called Miles from Competency. What if I told you that who is Phillip Brooks is the new who is K-State? That Gavin Potter comparing himself to Ray Lewis was only the second dumbest thing that happened on Saturday. That one 40-plus yard punt return just wasn't enough to stop kicking it to Brooks. That two 40-plus yard punt returns, one of which was a touchdown, just wasn't enough to stop kicking it to Brooks. That three 40-plus yard punt returns, two of which were touchdowns, just wasn't enough to stop kicking it to Brooks. What if I told you that hiring the wide receivers coach at Bethel to be your special teams coordinator probably isn't a good idea? That while we're at it, getting your offensive coordinator from Bethel probably isn't a great idea either. That after KU polishes off a winless season, Les Miles is coming to raid the NAIA for coaches once again. Watch your back, Kansas Wesleyan. That the most talented member of the KU football staff is the graphic designer who has to hide the game score in plain sight on the end of quarter Twitter graphics. What if I told you that Gavin Potter would have been better off playing the entire game shirtless, because then no one would see his name every time Deuce Vaughn broke his ankles? That it'll take a lot of Jack and ketchups to drown Jeff Long's sorrows after realizing he still owes Les Miles almost $10 million. ESPN's 30 for 30 presents Miles from Competency, a Kansas football story. Saturdays this fall on... Wait, they really make people watch this every Saturday? What do you think there, Mitch? Your second time hearing it. What do you think?
I love the references to the 40-plus yard returns K-State was having, kept allowing them. But the ending is the best. Unfortunately for KU, they're not going to be getting any ratings. Well, actually, it's probably fortunate that they're not going to be getting any ratings in Manhattan this Saturday. I don't think it's your best 30 for 30, but you got the point across.
Don't think it was my best 30 for 30.
No.
Which one do you prefer?
Man, they're starting to blend together.
There's two Kansas, two Iowa State, one Nebraska. I guess now three Kansas, two Iowa State, one Nebraska.
I would say your last, if I remember correctly, your last Iowa State.
Last
after,
Iowa State, okay.
So it would have been after the Louisiana game, right?
Yeah, that was the drive for COVID-19. No, I didn't do one after Louisiana. I did one after they were supposed to – they changed their schedule. They dropped Iowa from the schedule, and somebody else. It was the drive for COVID-19. I believe that was the last Iowa State one there. But regardless, we had some fun. Maybe I did do another Iowa State one after that. I can't even remember at this point.
That's the thing. They're just all running together. We just need to, at some point, have a 30 for 30 marathon.
Okay, well, I do. I mean, I have a folder with all of them.
Because it's going to tell the whole story. It's chapters, really. I mean, this latest 30 for 30 is just another chapter. It's basically chapter after chapter after chapter. You've been telling this story for a couple of years now. I don't know if I'd really compare it to the Jordan documentary.
Oh, you can and should.
Oh, well. Oh.
I mean, it's better.
For you, I will. It's like the Jordan documentary.
It is better, yes. Who needs the last dance? When you have Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa State football to make fun of, who needs the last dance? So what do you think the final Les Miles 30 for 30 will be? And when do you think the final Les Miles 30 for 30 will be? Now, those are some good questions. Why don't you ponder that? I'll tell you why Tyler Lockett's about to become the next Jordy Nelson next.
I started the Maine Frisbee Golf Club at Cornell.
The game.
Man, Tyler Lockett is a stud. That was an insane game that Tyler Lockett had on Monday Night Football. Or Sunday Night Football, rather. I apologize. It's all about guy that doesn't really know all that much about football, thinks he's very smart because he has a fantasy team and he can go make a couple of clicks, and tries to think he's more smart than anybody else. Well, that guy may not really follow football all that much, but he follows fantasy football, and so he knows who Jordy Nelson and Darren Sproles are. So if you're talking about household name effect, like guys that are household names, you have to be big in fantasy. You really do, or else it's just not going to be there with any kind of casual fan across the country. Jordy and Darren definitely were. Tyler Lockett is now. And I think he's entering a stretch here where he is going to be as productive as Jordy was. Jordy had basically a six-year window from 2011 through the end of 2016, bordering on 2017, where he was total frontline receiver. At one point, he led the league in touchdowns. He had 4 or 5 years with over 1,200 yards receiving. He had a 15-touchdown year, a 13-touchdown year, a 14-touchdown year. That is a level above where Lockett has been. Okay, Lockett, 965, 1,057, the last 2 years with 10 touchdowns and 8 touchdowns. Very good, very productive, but not quite at that Jordy Nelson level. I think Tyler's ascent there is happening now in front of our eyes. He's had two monster games this year, okay, obviously including what he did on Sunday Night Football. And that's an important point as well. He did it on Sunday Night Football when everybody is watching. Everybody's watching that game. And it's not just because it's on Sunday Night Football. It's also because he plays for the Seahawks. And he plays with Russell Wilson. All right, he has the second best quarterback in the league on his team. And right now, he has the quarterback that's going to be the MVP. Again, you will not get me to budge off the Patrick Mahomes throne. We're not even going to have that discussion. Mahomes is a better quarterback than Russell Wilson, will be remembered as a better quarterback than Russell Wilson. But Russ right now is cooking this year. And Lockett's, I guess if you could say co-number one, but really the number one guy, along with DK Metcalf on that offense. But when you pair a receiver as effective as Lockett is with a quarterback that's as dynamic as Russell Wilson is, bam, you have that magic combination that Rodgers to Jordy was one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the league who has a very similar kind of skill set to Aaron Rodgers, right? I mean, Rodgers, especially back then in his heyday, could move around, was pretty mobile, and just an unbelievable arm, was winning all the time. Same deal with Russell Wilson in Seattle. Neither were like surefire, can't-miss prospects out of college, and both were players that sort of crept up on everybody. For Jordy, it was always the storyline of he was a white receiver, and generally they're not thought of as being that fast. And, you know, that's the thing Jordy's been asked about a million times. Like, how much did you take advantage of the fact defensive backs just didn't assume you were that fast because you were white? With Lockett, it's different, but I would say it's different because with him, it was more, and I can remember talking to a Seattle Seahawks beat writer right after Lockett was drafted, bringing him on, and him just being like, yeah, you know, real nice special teams weapon, gadget player, we'll see. And I told him, I was like, look, man, I think Lockett's going to be a really good, productive receiver. Like, I think you are underestimating what he can actually be for the Seattle offense. And there was always that vibe to how people viewed him because he was used on special teams a lot, and he was a great special teams player, and he's fairly small and diminutive. So you wouldn't think, hey, this guy's going to be a legitimate number one NFL receiver. So he's always fought that perception where Jordy was always fighting the white wide receiver perception. And now they come into their own after having 4 or 5 years in the league, and they're paired with great dynamic quarterbacks on high-profile teams. It's absolutely crazy and staggering the similarities there, and I think Lockett is headed to slam dunk the alley, you know, put down the oop to the alley on that comparison and become a receiver that has a 5 or 6 year stretch here like Jordy did.
And I'll add to the comparison as well, and that's with their maturity. Those are two guys that you're not going to get two better players that are going to be 100% doing the right thing for the team. They don't make selfish mistakes. They're not going to go out and, you know, get blitzed the night before a big game or anything like that, which I'm not saying everybody does that in the NFL, but there are a handful that do. The reason maturity comes to my mind, though, is we've seen the last handful of years wide receivers be prima donnas, think too much about themselves, and ruin what they had relationship-wise with the team they were with. And now they have a hard time trying to find a new home. That is not at all an issue with Tyler Lockett and Jordy Nelson. And you can say, yeah, they went to K-State. They went Jordy a little bit, but Tyler for his whole career under Bill Snyder. They were trained by the best, and they learned hard work there. Those were two guys that had maturity before they got to K-State. They were raised right in good homes, good areas. They grew up in good football programs. They knew what it took to be hard workers. And they've just adopted that all the way to where they are now in their lives.
Yeah, very, very much emblematic of K-State. Very much emblematic of K-State. And I say that as somebody that, you know, typically I would prefer more swag to my K-State. I would prefer more swag to my K-State. But the way that those guys played, that's swaggy enough. And I'll finish it with this. Pro Football Focus put this out. Highest passer rating by a duo this decade. So from 2010 to 2020. Number one, Aaron Rodgers throwing passes to Jordy Nelson. 132.7 passer rating. Number two, Russell Wilson throwing passes to Tyler Lockett, 128.9. And for context here, number three, Brady to Gronk, So the passer rating of Russell Wilson throwing to Tyler Lockett and Aaron Rodgers throwing to Jordy Nelson is higher than it was Tom Brady throwing to Gronk. And that's incredible. That's incredible. And K-State should be pimping that for all it's worth on the recruiting trail, promotional materials, whatever it is that you can get out there. Wide receiver you. Special teams you and wide receiver you. You want to come here? You want to go to the NFL? You want to be a legend? You can do it at K-State.
And if you want to be like me and be a fantasy football legend, John, there's a reason I'm 7-0 right now in our league. And that's because my quarterback is Russell Wilson and my top wide receiver, Tyler Lockett.
What a great segment ruined by fantasy football talk at the end. Coming up next, Ohio State having to apologize to Nebraska. This audio will make you laugh next. Get you the Ryan Day Nebraska audio here in just a moment. Shout out to Rob Cassidy, though. My guy, who's now the National Rivals college basketball reporter. He was jumping in on a take that I had today, which is that College Game Day deciding to go live from Augusta National at the Masters on November 14th to me is stupid. I don't, like, why are we crossing over college football and the Masters? Rob Cassidy jumped in and called it Boomer Coachella. He called the Masters Boomer Coachella, which is exactly what it is. Like, so many boomers treat the Masters like it is, man, I feel like Coachella combined with Woodstock, combined with Burning Man, like all of that, anything that young people like to gather together and have that be like the big congregational thing and like rite of passage, big festival day. That is what Augusta is to boomers. I don't get it. You guys know, like, I guess I wouldn't say that I dislike golf. I like the idea of golf, but I don't understand watching it on TV. The Masters does absolutely nothing for me. I don't really care at all about, like, the landscape of golf, except for some of the characters. Like, Tiger is interesting to me. Brooks Koepka is interesting to me. But I just don't really have I just don't care. And so, like, when I see it get treated with, like, the fanfare, like, it is the ultimate in sports, I don't know. I push back on that and I revolt. And if you're going to combine it with college football now, I'm like, I get it. The Masters never happens. That's the response I see from everybody. The Masters never happens at this time of year, so you have to make that collaboration. I mean, like, no you don't, because it's football and golf. Like, they're two totally different sports and entities. So, no, you don't need to combine them. I don't. All right, like, instead of making my regular peanut butter and jelly sandwich, well, I have peanut butter right here in my fridge. I also have ketchup. You know, they just happen to be right next to each other here. So how often do I get that opportunity to see them right next to each other? I might as well just put them on the sandwich. I have to have a peanut butter and ketchup sandwich. Like, no, I don't. I have the choice to not do that because they're things that don't go together. Like, you see what I'm saying here? Are we sending inside the NBA to Wimbledon? Are we going to send Charles Barkley to, interview Novak Djokovic?
I might watch that.
That actually would be pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
But we're not doing that. So, like, why are we sending College Game Day to the Masters? There's no reason to do it.
No.
There's no reason to do it outside of if you're somebody that loves both of those things, I'm sure you'll love it and your two worlds coming together. But I would like to think you could at least admit also at the same time it makes no sense.
I mean, I thought it was dumb, too, when I first heard about it. Dumbest thing I'd heard today. And then I kind of started breaking it down. I went and looked at the schedule for that, the 14th, right? And the Cats are off. And there's really only one big game, and that's Michigan hosting Wisconsin. Like, all right, not bad, I guess. At the big house, does ESPN want to go up to Ann Arbor in the middle of November? I probably wouldn't want to. And then I thought, well, ESPN's already going to be at the Masters anyway. They're going to have a set up. They're going to be broadcasting probably all weekend from there. So they're going to kill two birds with one stone and just put the College Game Day people down there.
I mean,
that's
why it's happening.
Save a crew from going somewhere else. They're saving money. All right, I'm not going to blame them too much.
I mean, that's why it's happening. It's cross promotion. It's not because it makes sense from any sort of a sensical perspective. Like, I don't feel like it's doing any kind of a service to the viewer, and I'm not looking forward to, like, Tom Rinaldi sappy stories telling me about how the blades of grass at Augusta translate to somebody who lost their mom tragically in a car accident on West Virginia's football team. Like, that's not my brand. I'm not here for that. So I'm not a huge fan of it, and I just enjoyed the fact that Rob Cassidy pointed out that the Masters is Boomer Coachella, because that was one of those like mind-blowing moments. I was like, that is so true. That is so true. What an epiphany.
But the question is, though, what is Lee Corso going to do for putting on the mascot head? There's no marquee game to pick.
He's probably going to take one of those pimento cheese sandwiches and just throw it on his head. Put it all over his face. That's what he'll do.
Is he going to pick Tiger and put on the red polo?
Maybe so. The possibilities are endless, Mitch. All into now. Where Ohio State, one of the real G's of the college football world, is having to toss you a sob story after the game about, well, we probably should have beat you 45-17 instead of 52-17. Sorry about that. That's Nebraska's program right now. I just want everybody to wallow in that because just sit in it and take it all in. Nebraska fans need to wallow in it. Everybody else, sit and take it in. All right? Just take it all in. It's beautiful because not only do Nebraska fans have this inflated sense of self, but it's also the program that ran the score up on everybody for decades.
They sure did.
For decades. The 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, when there's no scholarship limitations and they could just hoard players. Okay, Nebraska ran the score up on everybody all the damn time. And now are getting a taste of their own medicine coming back in spades. Scott Frost show you anything on Saturday that makes you think he's got this figured out and all turned around? Year three of the Scott Frost era? You gather anything from that? Nah, man. They're going to keep doing their thing, too. It was keep doing your thing Saturday. K-State kept doing their thing. Iowa State kept doing their thing.
My first dishonorable mention, I got to throw in Les Miles. It's way too easy. Just bonehead decisions all game against K-State. Phillip Brooks, 189 yards in punt returns. That's a new school record. He brought two back to the house. But they still kept kicking to him even in the second half. He was actually the only game-time decision on going with who's going to be the last dishonorable mention and who's going to be Jabroni of the Week. This was tough, but my last dishonorable mention, I'm going to get Penn State that last spot because with a minute 47 to go, they're running back Devin Ford, they just need another first down so they can run out the rest of the clock. But Indiana, huge upset for them at home to start the regular season against Penn State.
One of the coolest plays I've seen in college football in a long time. Like, especially considering the fact that it's Indiana against Penn State, like, lowly football school that's trying to beat big regional conference power. There was so much in that. That was awesome. Like, the end of that game was just phenomenal.
But my last, well, it's not my last. It is the Jabroni of the Week. And I had to go with them because of just the numbers behind of how bad of a loss this is. My Jabroni of the Week is Michigan State football. They lost to Rutgers on Saturday, 38-27, and in doing so, the Scarlet Knights, they snapped a 21-game losing streak in Big Ten play that dated back to November 4th, 2017, when they beat Maryland by 7 points. Now, what was even worse about this, the Spartans averaged 1.6 yards per rush. They turned over the football 7 times, and they turned the ball over on downs another 2 times. This is the first 0-1 start for Michigan State since 2008. The loss also ended the Spartans' 21-game winning streak at home in the opening game of the season. It's the first game for Michigan State under their new head coach, Mel Tucker, who went 5-7 in his only year at Colorado. And what a win for Rutgers coach Greg Schiano starting his second stint at Rutgers.
And before you put any of this on my guy Scotty Hazel,